All right. 1 Corinthians 11 is the obvious passage when we come to consider head covering for ladies in Christian worship. 1 Corinthians chapter 11. I'll ask you to look for something as we do this reading. I'll ask you to look for the fact that this is lined up with communion, and that in verse 2 we have the word ordinances. And the apostle is exhorting that the people keep the ordinances, and this is one of them. I must confess that until this week, I never noticed that before. It never hit me. This is one of the ordinances. Now, that is no more than a precept. It is a habit, a practice that Christians are to keep, just like communion. The Lord has commanded us to remember Him. And this is one of the ordinances, that a precept that is laid down for us. Now, I think that if we were to abandon communion, you would say that's not right. That just is not obedient to the Lord, and it will not be pleasing to the Lord. So I just want to point that out as we read this here. Let's begin. Be ye followers of me, even as I also am of Christ. Now I praise you, brethren, that ye remember me in all things, and keep the ordinances as I delivered them to you. But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonoreth his head. But every woman that prayeth or prophesieth with her head uncovered, dishonoreth her head. For that is even all one as if she were shaven. For if the woman be not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it be a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he is the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of the man. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. For this cause ought the woman to have power on her head because of the angels. Nevertheless, neither is the man without the woman, neither the woman without the man in the Lord. For as the woman is of the man, even so is the man also by the woman, but all things of God. Judge in yourselves, is it comely that a woman pray unto God uncovered? Doth not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame unto him? But if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. But if any man seem to be contentious, we have no such custom, neither the churches of God. Now, in this that I declare unto you, I praise you not, that ye come together not for the better, but for the worse. For first of all, when ye come together in the church, I hear that there be divisions among you, and I partly believe it. For there must be also heresies among you, that they which are approved may be made manifest among you. When ye come together, therefore, into one place, this is not to eat the Lord's Supper, for eating every one taketh before other his own supper, and one is hungry and another is drunken. What? Have ye not houses to eat and to drink in? Or despise ye the church of God and shame them that have not? What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you in this? I praise you not. All right, we'll end there. The rest of the chapter, of course, is very familiar to us, as it is the communion section. Let me say that this is a difficult day to exhort ladies to wear head covering in worship, because it is usually seen as, well, if in the secular world, it would be looked upon now as almost equal to racist, equal to misogynist, that you are against women. This is a way to keep women in their place and so on, that it is contrary to women's liberty and women's rights and women's freedom, women's equality. And of course, this is all the product of the feminist movement. And we are reaping today the harvest of this humanistic approach, this secular approach that has come like a great storm into our society. And churches are affected. And sadly, there are churches who no more exhort or teach on this very subject of encouraging ladies to wear head covering in public worship. They have really just gone silent about it. I haven't heard anyone take the time to expound on it, expose it, or even to defend. Well, there are, if you go websites, you'll find all kinds of ideas on this. But most churches just let it alone. They don't even mention it. And of course, as time goes by, less and less, fewer and fewer ladies wear head covering, and it becomes a non-issue. Now, we are faced with the issue now, what are we going to do as a church? Are we going to just let it drop, let it go by, say nothing, go with the general trend of things? Of course, we're not going to go with the world. We're not going to go with the secular trends. And we do not want ladies in our churches to be feminists in the sense that they're always protagonists fighting for their liberties and freedoms and so on. And I would expect that when a woman is saved by grace, loves the Lord, that there will be a recognition of her role. This is called in Christian circles complementarianism. That means that God created woman to be the complement to the man. Now, that's a nice term, complement. But it's a hard pill to swallow for many, many modern-minded ladies. I'm not just a complement, I'm equal. I have as much right and authority as my husband. And of course, this is the attitude of the worldly-minded woman versus the godly-minded woman. So I'm not really going to address and exhort women here today to have the godly mind. I know you, I see how you live, I see how you worship. You're not pushing to be deacons and elders in the church. You're not telling me that we should have girls go to seminary to become ministers. You are not of that mind. So our subject today really comes down to coming to biblical grips with how can we take this position. Now the hat, of course, the head covering, is the symbol of complementarian thinking. If a lady puts on a head covering and she's a feminist in heart, well, what have we accomplished? Does that please the Lord? Knowing that she's got this head covering on, but inside she's fuming against men. And it's a sad fact that in society, fuming is not a strong word anymore. There's a lot of attitude, there's a lot of insistence. And in the workplace, employers and managers and leaders have to be careful how they handle their staff unless women think that they are being belittled in the workplace. And of course, this attitude comes into the church. Are we belittling women and making them lesser in some way by saying you are a complement to your husband rather than saying you are saved by grace, you are equal in salvation? I have a little quote. I've got it. I wrote it in the end of my notes. It might be helpful. I should give it to you now, just it might help. Equality in one sphere is not inconsistent with subordination in another. Now, take example in the workplace. If it's day one at the workplace and you've got a manager, a boss, and you're going to him for your direction. Now, you're no less a human being. You're no less a Canadian. You are no less male or female because you submit to your boss. He's going to write the check at the end of the week or the month and pay your salary. So you submit to the person in authority and you accept, I am the employee, he's the employer, and that's our relationship. But that does not make you lesser a human being, lesser male or female, just because. And it doesn't matter if the boss is a man or a woman, it doesn't matter. You are still in that subordinate relationship. Now, I hope that's a help in, you know, when we come to this subject, that for a lady to accept that she is created by God to be a complement to her husband, and under the leadership of the church, she's a complement, that she is not lesser. Doesn't mean that you are less a woman, less a Christian, less a child of God, less important, less valuable. That thinking really needs to be undone. As we read this passage, the foundation comes down to ladies wear head covering in public worship for two reasons. Number one, her head is her husband. Her husband's head is Christ. You read this chapter very carefully, you will have this hierarchy. The head of Christ is God, and in the covenant of grace, Jesus is no less equal to God. He thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but he made himself lesser. He took the form of a servant. And so the head of Christ is God. The head of the man is Christ. And the head of the woman is the man, her husband. And that is the order. And it is an order that God has ordained. And once we step out of that order, we are going to have problems. If Christ did not submit to the will of the Father, he could never have been our Redeemer. If men do not submit to the rule of Christ, can they even be a Christian? And it comes all the way down. What basis is there for this? Well, if you go to verse 9, and I'm really jumping into the heart of the issue rather than just following the notes at this point, but if you go to verse 9, you will see that the strong basis for this order of things, this order of things, which is symbolized by a lady wearing something on her head in public worship, that it is based on creation. Creation. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for, or created for, the man. And we know the creation story. Adam was made first. God put him to sleep, brought a woman into existence out of the rib or substance of Adam. She is made of his flesh and his bone, his nature, and that's God's creative act. Now, when women say, I don't want to follow the complementary role, I want an equality role, I want to be an authority, whatever, then the issue is creation. You resist, you oppose God's order of creation. Once you see this as a creation basis, then you will understand it's timeless. Doesn't matter what century you're living in, and it doesn't matter what culture you're living in. Doesn't matter what part of the world you're born into, that order is still the same. Male or female, God's order is the woman was made for the man. She is to complement the man. You remember Adam's cry? It is not good for the man to be alone. And of course, this is God's gift of and purpose of marriage. And, well, I don't want to stray into all the biology of how this works between male and female, but that's God's obvious creation. So a woman glorifies God by delighting in her femininity. I want to emphasize this, so I'll say it again. A woman glorifies God by delighting in her femininity and her acceptance. I am created a woman. I have biologically been given the gifts and abilities to procreate, bring forth children. And of course, women need a husband to give birth to children. That is indisputable. Although we're living in times when all of that seems to be in the realm of confusion. I don't think we need to go there today. But that is the delight of the woman, to glorify God in majoring on her femininity. That's the way she will dress, the way she will conduct herself. And of course, that's the way that she will support her husband. That's the way she will pray in the church. What a wonderful thing for a woman to be in the prayer room of the church, say, Lord, help me to live the life of a wife, a mother, to glorify God and all the responsibilities and the privileges that that brings. And thereby, the woman glorifies God. It's based on creation, it's timeless, and it doesn't matter what part of the world you're born in. Culture, this is beyond culture. Now, this culture argument is very often used against ladies wearing head covering, because there are those who say, well, that was Corinth. Corinth was the Greek world. In Greeks, there was a lot of prostitution. Women who shaved their heads were prostitutes, and so on. There was a lot of sodomy. There was a lot of role switching and all of those problems. That's true. Corinth was a very sinful place. But to say that the scripture record here applies only to Corinthians or to Greek Christians would be very far from the truth. One point I would lay down on this, if you go to verse 16, this advice, this practice is not just related to one church, because the apostle refers to the churches, plural, the churches of God. It's also a fact that the early Christians, and consistently right up to this last century, the Christian church has practiced head covering for ladies in worship. That's been a given. It's been so much a given that when you read sermons of Spurgeon and some of the great, you know, preachers, he didn't need to even speak on the matter. It was a practice. It was completely practiced. And if you look at photographs of churches and congregations, especially up to World War II time, to a woman, every lady had head covering. That was a given. And this idea, this argument, that the cultural argument, as it's called, that it's only related to Corinth in the first century, not to today, is easily answered. It's easily answered on the basis of creation. It's easily answered on the fact that it's churches plural, the churches of God. And so this applies across the board. Now, when we come to look at the details, okay, this is God's teaching, God's will. This is for each age. What is God requiring? What is God requiring? What are we to wear? And we have to admit this is not perfectly defined to, you know, color, shape, size, how much of the head is covered, hair, ears, whatever. You know, it is not defined. What the Bible teaches here, if you look at verse 6, you will see, for if the woman be not covered, let her also be shorn. Now, the word covered is a Greek word. And I think a little bit of Greek might help us here. I don't want to disturb that, but it's made up of two words. Uh-oh, that's my Greek coming out. I better not do that here. Let's do a normal English A here. Two words, kata, kaluto. Kata is a preposition in the Greek language, and it means down, kata down. And kaluto comes from the word kalafe, head. Down on the head, that's it. It's something pressing down on the head. If we're going to be word wise and word strict here, that's as much information as we have in the Bible. Doesn't say it has to be yay big. Doesn't has to be this thick. It just says something pressing down on the head, covered. And maybe we should even add to that something man-made material pressing down on the head. Because there is the other argument later on in the chapter that a woman's hair is given for a covering. And that many people use as, what shall I say, a way out. That, you know, all this doesn't really matter in the end. Now, did you notice that verse 15? Maybe we'll just deal with this now. But if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her. For her hair is given her for a covering. Now, that seems to be the very opposite to what Paul already said. And the issue is this a conflict? Do we have 14 verses teaching that a man should not worship with head covering on his head? You know, if you've got a cap or a hat, remove it before you go into a place of worship. That if a woman is not covered, she should be shorn. Are we going to set that all aside because of verse 15, where it says, for her hair is given her for covering? The answer is, again, a Greek word. And the Greek word is perikalupto. Peri. Notice the prefix is different. Peri is another preposition, and it means something around. Any Greek word, and there's hundreds and hundreds and thousands of such words where peri is put in the front, and it means around. It could be around your house, it could be around anything. But where you have this wrap around, and of course a woman's hair, when it is styled, can be wrapped around, it can be tressels, it can be all kinds of methods of a hair, what we would call a hairdo. And there's no man-made material involved. Her hair is her covering, her wrap around, her glory. It is her femininity. There's another word here, hair, for her hair is given her for a covering. That is the Greek word kome. Kome. K-O-M-E. And if I was a dictionary etymologist, I would probably say in the English, we get the word comb from that word. So it's the way you comb your hair. It's the way you style it. So verse 14, is all about the styling of the hair. And it's given her for a covering. That's her femininity. That's her complimenting the meal by her beautiful appearance. And of course, that's what women do. How many minutes and hours do women spend at the mirror? Well, men are usually saying, come on there, it didn't take you all day. You know, ladies can spend a lot of time at the mirror just fixing their hair, especially for special events. You know, weddings and all those things. The hairdresser comes along and it's a big thing. You know, if I was to do that and say, you know, I need a hairdo before I go to church on Sunday, you know, that would be the opposite. That would be laughable. So, what to wear? What to wear? And I think we have to answer that question. You know, the Muslims do crazy things with that. Not that they're reading 1 Corinthians 11, but they have this head covering. Roman Catholics have practiced this historically. And it'd be more of a shawl, and it would be draping down the whole head. Now, I can't actually argue against that, because I don't have more information in 1 Corinthians 11 that would say that's not right. I can't say to a lady that has got a shawl down to her shoulders or whatever that that's wrong. And I can't say to a lady, what's on your head is too small. And I think Christians get themselves all tangled up by attempting to try and, you know, insist that it has to be a certain shape or size or whatever. After all, it's a symbol. It means nothing more than what's in the heart. And if you are a Christian lady glorifying God in your heart, rejoicing in your femininity, rejoicing in how God has created you, and that you may glorify God by being a wife to your husband and serving in the Lord's church as a woman from head to toe, the symbol then, that's the simple thing. That's just a little badge that indicates you obey the Lord in this matter. And it is done so for the Lord. When and where? I missed that one. When and where? There's two reasons why it's public worship, not at home or in society. Mennonites and Amish and other people have, you know, gone the way that a woman should almost wear it 24/7, or as soon as you get out of bed in the morning, put this on, and it's on all day, no matter what you're doing. The teaching here in 1 Corinthians is that it's related to public worship. First of all, it's a church letter. This is a church letter. It makes no mention of the home, no mention of domestic life. It talks about the angels in verse 10. For this cause ought the woman to have power on her head because of the angels. Now again, that's public worship, and we expect the angels to be present and taking an interest in the worship of the saints on earth. And so for these reasons, when and where, public worship, when we are worshiping the Lord. And, you know, there might be some events in church life when it's not a regular event. Nobody's going to come down heavy on that. But if it's regular public worship, Christians gathering together, men and women, the whole congregation, let's call it congregational worship, then certainly they should be wearing head covering. Some have asked, what to do when you just have a ladies' meeting? No men present. Well, I'll leave that up to the individual. I'll not try and push that one at all. If someone likes to wear it, well, that's good. And if not, I don't think we would be in a position to say, you know, it's absolutely, totally, sinfully wrong. One thing, how are we doing for time? One thing, and then maybe we'll take a few questions. I'll let you answer the issue down at verse 16, where it says, we have no such custom. We have no such custom. There are people who have taken that little clause and they have just stood everything on its head and said, well, you know, there's a whole lot of things about head covering, but we don't do it. We have no such custom. Now, I have to ask and look into this carefully. What is this custom? Is it the custom of head covering? Now, it would be very strange for an apostle to write 15, 16 verses in the Bible about this whole matter dealing with hierarchy, headship, husbands, complementary creation, angels, the different types of head covering, to go through all of that and then say, but we don't do it. That would be, you know, if we can do that with this part of the Bible, I would tremble for your attitude with any part of the Bible. So what is this custom? I think a very simple answer is, if you read, let's go back to verse 15 and read it right into verse 16. But if a woman of long hair, it is glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. But if any man seem to be contentious, we have no such custom, neither the churches of God. The custom or the habit is the contention, the arguing about it, the dispute about it. That really, in Paul's mind, was a matter of settling the issue. So we have no such practice as contending. We don't make this a matter of division. And let's face it, ladies' head covering is probably one of the most visible things that you can do. And I know, being self-conscious, coming along to church, you get out of the car and you've got something on your head. And again, it doesn't matter if it's red, white, blue, yellow, what color. It doesn't matter what size, it doesn't matter the style of it. But there you come right into church. Andy and Alan are going to be greeting you in the foyer. And they might, well, there's something on your head today. And you take your seat in church, and whatever seat, especially if you sit at the front, you're going to be conscious, everybody's looking at me. I've got this thing on my head, and I have never done that before. It's hard. In war terms, it's ridiculous. It's the simplest thing in the world. But in social terms, in public terms, in a lady who might be conscious of her appearance, and which lady is not, who is not, it's difficult. I really have to go and shop for this. I don't want to get something that looks nice, and I don't want it to be talked about, so I'll try and get something that some of the other ladies are wearing, and then I won't stick out. So you end up getting groups of Christians, and they sort of tend to wear the same thing. That's okay. That's not a problem. And again, it's a symbol of what's in your heart. And if you've been rowing with your husband all week, and you show up at church with him to worship the Lord with a head covering on, that's not going to feel good. That's not going to work, because it's saying something that's not reality. So there has to be a life behind this. There has to be a Christian testimony behind this, and a readiness to come to church with this visible sign that others see and note, and maybe you'll get asked, hey, what made you wear a hat today? And I suppose you might need an answer for that. And in the end, it ought to come down to conviction. Are you doing it for men, or are you doing it for God? I remember Mr. Kearns telling a story of a lady in his church. When he went to Greenville 30-something years ago, probably nearly 40 years ago, it was already a Presbyterian church. It was an independent Presbyterian church. It had broken off from somewhere else. And they were without a pastor. And, of course, they looked to the Free Presbyterian Church to supply the pulpit. They ended up calling Dr. Alan Kearns to be their minister. Now, there was a bit of a tipping point in the church when this issue came up. Some did wear head covering, some didn't. And he was asked to speak on the subject. And of course, that might just turn the whole scale of the church. But this particular lady felt convicted about it and was convinced that it was right. And so she started wearing head covering. Well, she did get asked about it at the food store, at a mall or somewhere, out in public. Now, she didn't have the hat on there, but somebody noticed you were. So they saw her in the mall and talked to her. And said, what's this head covering thing? And this other lady said, you know, I wouldn't do that to please a man. And her answer simply was, I'm not pleasing a man. I'm pleasing my Lord. I'm pleasing the Lord. And that's where it really needs to come down to. That's where it really needs to come down to. The last thing we want is X number of ladies wearing head covering with resentment, with any sense, I am belittled, I am humbled by this, I am subservient, any of those attitudes. That ought to be completely out, completely out. And I think for that reason, we are wise that we don't insist that every lady that comes through the door of the church immediately wears head covering. There are some churches in the past I've known of, they keep a stack of hats in the foyer of the church. If a visitor shows up unsuspecting that they need to wear a head covering, they get one handed to them and they expect it to wear it. Now, okay, if you're living in a community where that is the 99% of people who do that, but when people are not used to it and so on, I think we need to give time, give space. Because if we could get women to wear a head covering and didn't understand why. And there was a spirit of resentment about it. I don't think it would have accomplished anything. I think it's better to give time and to allow ladies to come to their conviction. And our bottom line is membership. If you apply for membership, we can't proceed further until that's your conviction. And you wish to do so freely, voluntarily. Now, I know that seems like almost a double standard. You know, you're saying you must, and then you must do it freely. But we give the space and we give the time to grow into it. Now, it's touchy. And I've chosen deliberately to do this in this setting, because to do it on a Sunday morning service where we have all kinds of visitors, perhaps, and people feel they're hit on. And I thought it wise that we pre-announce this. Like, ladies, you knew what we were in for today when you came along. You knew what the topic would be. And I thank you for coming. I do thank you for coming. It's better to know than to just run from the subject. So we have to be wise how we handle this as a church. The other thing we need to be careful about is we don't want a congregation where people come in and 50% of ladies wear head covering and 50% don't. That's confusing. Do they believe this or not? Are there two congregations here? So membership really is the only place at which we can say that is now a requirement. There might be some argument for saying, well, if you're going to take communion, you should do it. And I would say, yes, you should do it. But can I say you must do it? There's the gray area of church life. There's the gray area of church life. Is it a sin? Is it grieving to the Lord when a woman who comes in and doesn't even know these things, never grown up with them, never heard them before, and we allow her to take communion in our church without a head covering? Is the Lord grieved? What might grieve the Lord is a woman who does know these things and chooses not to. That's about as much as we can say and as far as we can go with this. So we've dealt with this to wrap up here. We've dealt, number one, it's an ordinance. It's a precept that should be kept in the church. It is based on creation and this complementarian position or role of the wife and the woman. It is in public worship because of the angels. And it is something the man should never, ever do, is come to church and sit through a meeting with a hat on. And he's just gone. But I remember years ago, before we built this building, we were meeting in a hall in Cloverdale. And I think it was a Sunday evening. But there was this young person came in, dressed sports clothes and stuff, and a ball hat on, and sat right in the front. And from my perspective, it looked like a guy. And Andy's dad was usher, and I wasn't sure what Mike was going to do. I was wondering. But that person sat through the whole meeting with a ball cap on. And it was kind of a distraction, I have to accept. There's a appear to be a man. But at the end of the service, it turned out it wasn't a man at all. It was a girl. Really? So she was doing the right thing. And, someone could have come down heavy. So be careful. Be careful. That's the message. When you're dealing with individuals and what they do. You know, if this is somebody that's coming to your church on a regular basis, you know, you may take the opportunity to talk to them. You know, just have a chat with them and say, you really love hats, don't you? You know, just bring up the subject and talk to them. Do it gently, do it wisely. And as a congregation grows, you know, we're a small church, it's relatively easy for us. And I recognize if you're in a church 500 people, man, how do you manage all this? It gets harder and harder as growth continues. The only answer is you get more elders and you let them deal with it. And you assign sections of your congregation to elders. That's how we would do it as a Presbyterian church. You know, in some larger churches like our Greenville church, they have sections of their congregation assigned to an elder. If you have an issue, you go to your elder. They have some home meetings, maybe once a month, and they get to know their elder. And in a larger church, it keeps it manageable, sizable. We're not at that stage by any means. So, but you know, you try to try and manage these things. All right. Any questions?
Yes, my question.
Yes, John.
There's no freedom in the world at all. So a lot of beheadings. There's a lot of punishment in the world.
Yeah, thankfully it's in the world. Yeah. We don't behead ladies.
No.
You don't wear hats.
No. Really, we're against God.
Right. Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of sad things. Yeah. A lot of sad things in the world. Yes, Margaret. And it's quite possible, even in those years, way years ago, if you asked the average Christian woman, could you prove me to the Bible why you wear a head covering? Many of them might struggle and not have to, work through it. But because it was a given, this was done. We're living in an age today where we have to prove everything and reinforce everything to try and keep things biblical. And that's, if we're not going to be biblical here in the first half of 1 Corinthians 11, do we need to have communion every month? If you're not consistent, and we've got to aim for consistency in our Bible teaching and our practice, that it lines up. Because someone might say to us, well, you don't obey the Bible here, but you do obey a Bible there. What's that?
Confusion anyway. A lot of it's confusion anyway. But for people,
yeah.
But with the Orthodox Jews, for example, the men also are covering themselves.
Right.
So that's been flipped on its head, and probably
exactly.
So, why then did it switch from the men were covering in synagogue to men not?
Well, that shows you that this custom did not come from the Jews. This Christian teaching did not come from the Jews. And there's many more historical aspects to this too. What was the consistent practice in Greece and Rome, in all those cultures? But again, I didn't go there because my point is that creation, it's based on creation, and all people come from creation, right? So the creation argument is the strongest one. Because if you dig up the historical, I went to the Encyclopedia Britannica and I discovered, that they did wear hats in certain cultures, and you could be disputing that for decades. So I choose not to go there. Let's stick with creation, which is mentioned right here, verse 9 in this chapter. And, if you believe that you're created by God, that hits home, that nails it for you.
I find it interesting that it's like something of the heart, okay? So in our society today, we have a general obstinance of things against Christianity, against biblical teaching. But look at a football game in the U.S. The men take their hats off. And I've been at events in the U.S. where somebody doesn't take their hat off. The wife, girlfriend goes, hey, William Grant. And he puts it over his heart. So it's interesting that there, nobody cries out in a big way against it. But that's not a Christian event.
That's it. Okay? That's it.
We can accept this because it's a patriotic thing, right?
Yes.
So it's very interesting how society keeps the one, throws away the other.
And if you're a lady and the queen invites you to one of her events, you will get the dress code and one will be head covering. That's the way with British royalty. But then, of course, we're Canadian and there's Americans who really don't want to be British. So you could go in all directions on this. How important is it? How important is it? I think my contention is if we let this go and say it doesn't matter, then someone's going to come and say, well, you let that go, and that doesn't matter, and you've got 16 verses in the Bible that teach about it, and then you expect me to get baptized? And how many verses are there about that? Consistency. If we're going to be biblicists, we need to be clear in our practice. Okay.
I mean, I agree with you, but in many areas, but I also feel that people, I've been at a pastor group from St. John's, and one of the men, who's a very good doctor, he said, Because I'd say the Bible speaks about rewards in heaven. People get rewards on earth for service to their country and things, medals. And there's rewards in heaven. And, you know, we should work more, you know, for, you know, in our lives, you know, obviously, like, because there's an incentive there to get these mm-hmm. rewards in heaven, crowns and things that will fade away and all that. And he said, well, and then he said, I was surprised. Oh, no, as long as I get into heaven. And I think that's the attitude of a lot. There's so much detail. Yeah. The New Testament, yeah. And people yeah. will just go, well, you know, yeah. it's legalistic. As long as I get into heaven, I'm there at worship, I'm involved with my church, I don't need to follow all the itty bitty.
Yes.
As long as I get into heaven.
Yes. And we can't say it's an essential to salvation. You know, we can't say this is an essential doctrine to salvation. If I'm preaching the gospel to, I don't know, somebody at a SkyTrain station somewhere, if I'm out there preaching the gospel to the worldly, I'm not going to start preaching about head covering. You know, I'm not even going to get there. But when they come to worship, you form a church, and this is the place of weekly biblical worship, then now it's the time to introduce these things. Even just reading through the Bible, you're going to come to it. So what do you do if you're doing a series through 1 Corinthians, you come to 1 Corinthians 16, you can't just skip it. And I remember Dr. McClelland throwing out the challenge, if this doesn't teach that women should wear head covering, what does it teach? You know, what does it teach? Why would an apostle spend all these verses on it if it doesn't mean that? Or if it, you follow the line, we have no such custom.
But why is it thrown out? Most churches don't have.
Well, that is the thing. Well, antinomianism, why is the Lord's Day thrown out?
Yeah,
you know, we've got so many issues these days. And this is counterculture. We're going against culture. We're going against the feminist movement. And a lot of churches want to bring people, oh, you don't have to worry about a hat in our church. You just, you know, that attitude's not in our church. You'll never get guilt-ridden and beaten up about wearing hats in our church. If you go to some of those smaller churches, you'll get that. We have to live with that.
That's tattoos. There's not many tattoos in London, I can't believe.
Yeah, that's another one. Yeah, I know a young preacher, he's got a whole pile of tattoos. Now he wants to become a minister.
Who's that?
I don't know how he's going to live with it. He's got all these tattoos. And if it's a hot day in the pulpit and he takes his jacket off, you know, he's going to preach him all these tattoos. That could be an issue. So, you know, this is the challenge. We're living in an ungodly world where all these attitudes are fuming and furious. And we're just trying to follow the Bible. So let's do what we can. All right, how's our time? Oh dear, it's gone. We must stop. Father, thank you for your grace to us. Oh Lord, bless us today. Receive our praises in Jesus' name. Amen. My, I didn't even hear the organ.